You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
This is Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle, coming to you live from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. NBA play-in games tonight, Miami and Chicago, Sacramento and New Orleans. You'll hear him here on ESPN Radio. No Jimmy Butler, no Zion Williamson for those two teams, Miami and New Orleans, respectively. Before we get to the Cowboys and some of the latest with them, I just want to bring up one thing about the Raiders, guys. So we talk about the Raiders as one of these teams that is desperate for a quarterback, as you just put out the top five teams that are desperate for a QB and need one in the first two rounds of the draft. Check out at Unsports ESPN for that list if you missed it. Raiders were on that team, on that list, excuse me. How do they get to three or two, though? I mean, two seems illogical, but how do they get all the way up to three? Because that's the team that we have most closely tied to Jaden Daniels if he doesn't go to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
How do they get there?
Well, it's three first-round picks, right? Like, the San Francisco 49ers set the precedent in the 2021 draft with Trey Lance. So it starts at three first-round picks. But what complicates it is what the Minnesota Vikings have, knowing that they're trying to get up to get a quarterback too, right? Because they have 11, they've got 23, and they could offer up a first-round pick in 2025. So you get three first-round picks in two drafts as opposed to three first-round picks over three drafts. I think the former is more attractive than the latter. So it would be about the Raiders finding a way to sweeten the pot, and I don't know if that's a veteran player. I don't know if that's additional mid- and late-round draft picks to combine with the three first-round picks, but, I mean, that's where it starts.
Can I ask an absurd question then?
What's
on
up?
This? Would they ever consider trading Davante Adams to get a top 10 pick? Ooh. Like, would the Jets ever give them 10 for Davante? Would the Bears ever give them 9 for Davante? Just so they would have two picks in the top 13 and then next year's pick to offer up to a team like New England or if Washington were in the mix. Like, is there any
you
chance
said offer up Davante?
I said that.
I mean, why would you want to offer up Davante if you're breaking in a young quarterback that you're taking with a top three pick?
Because
exactly.
It's for the long haul, and you still have Jakobi Meyers, who's not Davante, but he's very good. You probably could get another wide receiver at some point in the draft. I don't know if that wide receiver
is going to be any good.
No, and Devontae's amazing.
Listen,
before
I would get rid of Davante Adams, I'd offer up Max Crosby. Now, I don't think the Raiders are going to do that because they just gave him more money, but I would put that on the table before I'm trading Davante Adams. I mean, the young quarterback and the number one wide receiver, they work hand in glove. I mean, when you have somebody that can dictate front and coverage, that clears up the entire picture for the quarterback in terms of the different looks that he's seeing from the defense and knowing where to go with the football. Because Davante Adams is going to command two people paying attention to him on the defensive side of the ball. He quite literally changes the math for a young quarterback.
The Max Crosby thing is fascinating, especially since they went out and got Christian Wilkins. The problem with that is Max Crosby and Antonio Pierce feel like they're best friends.
Yeah.
Right?
I really advocated for him.
So, and that's where it gets dangerous. You don't necessarily want to be friends with the players if you're the
coach. It ain't about friendship. It ain't personal. It's straight business, B. It's straight business.
I hear you.
You want to stick around, it's business. Listen, and they took another defensive lineman in the first round last year, the Las Vegas Raiders. So, I mean, I'm not saying that Max Crosby is expendable. Like, I think he's actually indisposable, not just with his production, but what he means for that culture. But you know what else helps the culture?
A quarterback.
Having a quarterback that can compete with Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert.
That is true. All right. Earlier this week on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, Stephen Jones, Cowboys VP, was asked about going all in. That's been the mantra all offseason for the Cowboys, which is laughable because I watch NFL Live and they put up the graphics and Laura Rutledge throws to the graphics and it's players gain, players loss, and it's only Eric Kendricks. It's one single person on the graphics. But Stephen,
and that's after we shamed them into trying to make
that
it.
We get credit for that. He was going to sign somewhere else, and we said they should have signed him, and then he switched. So here's Stephen Jones claiming they're always all in.
everybody can have their own definition of what that means, but I've never not known us to be all in, nor have I known anybody we compete against not to be all in. Doesn't mean it happens overnight, but when you're wanting to sign players like Dak and Micah and CD, then, you know, that certainly you have to hold money back if you want to have a realistic chance at signing those guys.
So this is an interesting spin that all 32 teams are all in now?
No, that's not true. The
Broncos feel like they're all in right now.
Yeah, because they're eating $85 million
they're all
in. Dead money.
They're all in. All in. No. All in. Yeah.
No. It's absolutely a ridiculous statement by Stephen Jones.
It's deflection is what it is. He's trying to say, look at this. This is what I meant to say, rather than take it what I said literally as all in when we haven't made any moves. Like you said, Evan, on the graphic, there's all of this exodus of talent and not enough being added. When we look at the Dallas Cowboys, do we really think that they're in a better position to be successful in the playoffs than they were this past year? Because that's their measure of success. It is only playoff victories. It is only Super Bowl championships. And I don't think they're in a better position. So I don't know how they can say that they're all in. And I think Stephen Jones is trying to deflect with a little bit of rephrasing or a shift in terminology.
Smalls, you know what frosts my cookies?
The
fact that he says, I got to withhold some money to pay my guys. I got to withhold money to pay Dak Prescott. I got to withhold money to pay CeeDee Lamb. I got to withhold money to pay Micah Parsons. You know what you could do is pay those guys before you absolutely have to.
Yeah.
If you pay them earlier as opposed to paying them later, it's less money because the market doesn't get inflated. It just makes sense. If you pay those guys a couple of years ahead of time, then all of a sudden you can afford to keep more of your homegrown talent. That just makes sense. As a matter of fact, the reason why you got into this trouble outside of signing Ezekiel Elliott when you absolutely didn't have to is waiting to pay Dak Prescott. You made Dak Prescott play out the string on his entire four-year rookie contract. Then your franchise tagged him twice. Of course he's going to get a top-of-the-market contract. And you're going to have to keep chasing after the top of the market in order to keep him. If you would have paid him after his third year, after he showed you that he's your guy for the future, because remember, in his rookie year, he made you bench Tony Romo, so you knew he was your guy. If you paid him after his third year, it would have been a lot cheaper, and you could have afforded to keep more of these players. That's the part that is absolutely asinine. Will McClay, their senior personnel executive, he does a phenomenal job of buying the groceries. It's just that the general manager, Jerry Jones, and the EVP, Stephen Jones, don't do a great job in terms of the timeline on when they pay those guys, and that's where they get themselves in trouble.
It's amazing that I could sit here in 2024 and properly say, and Smalls, you'll love this, that baseball strategy is better at this than football strategy.
Yes.
Baseball teams do this all the time. No, I'm saying, like, the Rays paid Evan Longoria, I think, 6 days into his a baseball career, right?
Look at the Padres and Fernando Tatis Jr.
Like when he was 12, I think they gave him a contract.
Yeah, they gave him a 14-year deal.
Right. And remember Cleveland back in the day with Tommy and Manny Ramirez? They were like, these guys are unbelievable. Let's just extend them out for as long as we can right now. And you're right about that with the Cowboys. But by the way, it gets worse because Lou Riddick, former NFL player and executive and ESPN NFL analyst, was on our show this week and had this to say about the Dallas Cowboys.
The fact is, your team as presently constructed, let's just say at the end of last year, wasn't good enough. Okay, and you're saying when you say all in, you know that everyone else means you're doing whatever it takes to get over the hump. Not to just get there, but to get over it. They're worse this year than they were last year.
Agreed.
They're worse. They have one true starter on the offensive line, and they don't have really a running game. There is no – look, quite honestly, I think as they sit right now, they're in trouble. They're in trouble. They're not going to win the division. They ain't going to come close to winning the division.
So – that is an amazing statement. I still can't get over it, Stephen Jones saying that all 32 teams are all in
it's
every
ridiculous.
Year.
It's like, ridiculous.
In what world?
It's ridiculous.
It's crazy. Are the Dallas Cowboys right now a playoff team?
I think that they are. I think that I could still see Dallas winning the division. I don't think that they are in a better place to advance in the playoffs, but I think they're still a playoff team as currently constructed.
Well, just basing it off of history, the NFC East hasn't seen a repeat champion since 2004, and the Cowboys won a division last year.
Okay, so you have to pick someone else to win the division.
I don't feel great about the Philadelphia Eagles and where they're at. So I don't know. That is the scary part. I don't know. And you know what makes that even worse? You have a quarterback that has a $59 million cap hit.
On purpose. They could have rearranged
it. I don't know if you're a playoff team and you have a quarterback that has a $59 million cap hit or whatever it is, 55, whatever it is. I don't know. Like, the offensive line is a concern. You lost Tyron Smith. You lost Tyler Biadasz. Like, I mean, you start seeing this attrition and guys graduating out of the program because they're getting contracts at other places. I just don't know if the Cowboys can continue to overcome all these losses. What gives me a certain degree of optimism is how they draft players. Mm-hmm. And so knowing that this is a deep offensive line draft, knowing that this is a deep wide receiver draft, knowing that there is some talent on the defensive side of the ball, especially in the back seven, I think they'll find a way to overcome some of it. But again, man, this is a team right now that has championship aspirations, and I don't know that they have all of the players that they need to compete at that level.
So let's try to be as fair as possible with this. Mike McCarthy, to his credit, when he's a head coach of a team that's healthy, wins double-digit games most years. Like and Dak Prescott is obviously an excellent quarterback. But let's say Lewis Riddick is 1,000% right there, worse this year than they are last year. But let's not get too extreme by that. Let's say they're two games worse. So let's put them at 10-7. Is there a team in the NFC East that you could see winning 11 games? Philadelphia did it last year. The Giants won 6. The Commanders won 4. Is there an 11-win team then in the NFC East? Because that would be a team winning the division over them.
I know this is going to sound crazy.
I know you think Washington, don't
Washington?
You?
I think Washington can do it.
Wow.
I think they
can. Why? Why do you think that?
Well, I mean, anywhere Dan Quinn is gone, the defense has been dramatically better. So when you look at all of the additions that they made on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, bringing in Dorrance Armstrong, bringing in Bobby Wagner. I mean, they already got Jonathan Allen. I think that team on the defensive side of the ball is going to be a lot better than people expect. If they get it right with the quarterback and they put an offensive line in front of them that can keep them upright more so than they did with Sam Howell the year prior, I think the Washington Commanders can pull it off. And I feel like I'm the boy that cries wolf because I said the same thing about the Commanders last year, and they went 4-13. But I honestly think
it looked good for the first five or six weeks.
I honestly think with Dan Quinn, things can be different. Like, they are going to get a bump. And when they get this quarterback, that's also going to give them a bump. Again, this is a situation now, from a talent standpoint, I'm not saying that the quarterback will be better, but from a talent standpoint, you're probably talking about a quarterback that has more tools in his bag, whoever they take at number two, than any other quarterback in the division. That's what it is.
Than Dak and Hurts?
Yes. More tools in his bag. Yes.
Wow.
Think about it. Those guys, Dak was a fourth-round pick. Jalen Hurts was a second-round pick. These guys are going to be they're going to be the second overall pick.
Yeah, upon arrival, I guess, yeah.
Upon arrival, they've got more tools in their bag.
So basically, when we have the conversation about who's this year's C.J. Stroud, who's the young quarterback that can make an immediate impact that potentially catapults his team to the postseason, you have now answered that question regardless of quarterback, even though you've been very clear that May over Daniels. What you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, CC, is that whoever is the quarterback of the Washington Commanders is this year's C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, what I'm saying is, the quarterback of the Washington Commanders is going to have a better chance of repeating what C.J. Stroud did and winning their division than the quarterback for the Chicago Bears, presuming that's Caleb Williams, than the quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings, assuming they draft one in the first round. He's going to have a better chance.
Wow. That is a bold statement, but you've been on Washington now for 2 years. Very interesting to look at what happens there.
But also the division matters too.
Yeah, but out to be way worse than I think that most of us would think it would be. I think the division's a little bit better than you do, but you may be right.
You're right.
I mean, Philadelphia fell apart last year.
They did.
And chose not to go get Belichick.
Yeah, but then they also had a leadership drain with Jason Kelce and Fletcher Cox. We don't know what's going to happen with the coaching staff. We don't trust Nick Sirianni. His top two lieutenants from 2 years ago when they went to the Super Bowl are now gone.
The Cowboys lost a ton of people, didn't add. The Giants starting quarterback is coming off of a massive injury. Everything you're saying leads us to where's the hope team? The hope team, obviously, would be Washington. Mike Tannenbaum is going to join us, ESPN NFL front office insider. There we go. Next on Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
We are presented by Progressive Insurance. At Progressive, they're making things even easier. They'll help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Mike Tannenbaum is here, ESPN NFL front office insider, of course, former GM Dolphins and the Jets. Mike, Bill Belichick was on with McAfee this week and said up until this point, agents leak all of this information with the draft. The days before the draft, the teams leaked that. From your perspective as a GM, walk us through that process and figuring out the draft by way of leaking information.
Yeah, I would say leaking in as much as trying to collect information and understand, you know, hey, what's going to happen, and then you'll react accordingly. I'll never forget, like, my very, very first draft, 2006, and we were sure that, you know, Reggie Bush was going to go number one, and away we were going to go, and maybe take Mario Williams. And the night before the draft, I'll never forget, the Houston Texans reach agreement with Mario Williams. I remember calling up Eric Mangini and speaking of Woody Johnson, say, hey, we got to be comfortable taking Reggie Bush. And obviously he went second to the Saints, and we took DeBrickashaw first and four. Point being is, like, information's like swirling all over the place. Some is true, some isn't. And look, the second pick, there is a lot of intrigue of it. And I'm telling you guys, like, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a couple curveballs in the coming days.
Mike T, last year we saw six trades in the first round in the NFL draft. The year before that, we saw nine. I'm curious from your perspective, because it seems like we see more draft day trades on opening night than we ever have in the four. What's the cause behind that trend?
You know, I think it's a couple of things. I think it's a little bit of a younger generation, a little bit more aggressive, and like, hey, we got a player, let's go pay the bill. And I think, Chris, like, you know, we talked about this off air as well, like, I think six quarterbacks are going in the first round. And I think if you're a team that needs a quarterback, like, go get him, pay the bill.
Speaking of that, Mike, we have a quarterback-rich draft. We have a lot of teams that are in need of a quarterback, and there's big debate over which quarterback should be ranked in which order. When you are putting together evaluations on quarterbacks, is there one or two traits or features in each quarterback that you rank higher than the others? Because as I'm reading these, I'm wondering how guys inside the front office view certain traits about a quarterback that would maybe stack one above the other.
Yeah, Michelle, it's a great question. I think this is a little bit of like my DNA growing up in the business. I think physical stature matters. And I'm not saying that just because I'm sitting next to Chris. But, you know, I do think, like, you know, there's that old expression, like, there's a reason there's weight classes in boxing. And I think we're talking about 17 games. We're on our way to 18 games, guys. Yeah. 66 different quarterbacks started, to Michelle's point. So I want the bigger guy. Over time, the bigger guy is going to play longer, and that matters. And if you don't believe me, go ask Cleveland, go ask Minnesota, go ask the New York Jets. What was it like last year when you lost your quarterback?
We're talking with Mike Tannenbaum, ESPN NFL front office insider. All right, let's go through this. If it was up to you, the order of the six quarterbacks.
Yep, so Caleb Williams, Drake May over Jaden Daniels for the reasons we just said. I love Jaden Daniels. I don't like him. I love him. I just hope that he modifies his play style for survivability. J.J. McCarthy, then for me, it's Michael Penix, Bo Nix. And if we had to go play one game tomorrow, I'm not so sure it wouldn't be Michael Penix. Like, just concerned about his injury history. But if you guys, like, if we just got flown in and six quarterbacks threw the football, I'm not so sure that we wouldn't sit here and say, wow, Michael Penix has the best arm.
Mike T, there's a lot of smoke around that number three overall pick. Elliott Wolf hasn't shied away about saying that they would potentially trade down, but they'd also be good staying where they're at and taking a quarterback. I know if you were in that chair, you would take the quarterback, but I'm curious to know, based on the history, based on your knowledge of the family and his dad, what are the New England Patriots going to do with the number three overall pick?
It's a mortal lock. They're taking a quarterback this year. They're taking a quarterback next year. They're taking a quarterback in 2026, 2027. You know why? Because when we were growing up, I was playing with Legos and Crayola crayons. You know what Elliott Wolf was doing? He was writing quarterback scouting reports, okay? He will get kicked out of the Ron Wolf estate, which is probably a lot of money because he was a long time acquirer.
Hey, it's not that far from where you lived.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't say that otherwise. Anyway, go ahead.
Anyway, they're taking a quarterback because when you look at the history, we have Kurt Warner on today. Do you guys remember the 1994 Green Bay Packer quarterback depth chart? Brett Favre was one.
Mark Brunell, Aaron Brooks, Kurt Warner.
Close. Ty Detmer and then Kurt Warner. Oh, point being is they took a quarterback every single year. And there is no way that Elliott Wolf, who was around his dad his entire life, when they took quarterback after quarterback, including Aaron Rodgers when they had Brett Favre, they are taking a quarterback. Look, all GMs lie this time of year. I know I'm part of that club. There is no way they're not taking a quarterback. And that just that goes for next year as well. Copy and paste my answer for a year from today.
Okay, so they're taking a quarterback. We got that part. But are they taking a quarterback at three? Could they trade down?
Yeah.
Presumably with the hypothetical with the Minnesota Vikings. Could they trade down, pick up 11, 23, and maybe some future draft capital, take a position player at 11, take a Michael Penix Jr. at 23? Could they do that?
Yeah.
That's the question that we want to know.
Yeah, that's it's a great question. The reason I say no is, like, I sat in that seat – and you don't want to get too cute. Because you're sitting there, and if you go back from 3 to 11, Chris, you lose control. And it's like so many things can happen. You know, could the Rams come up and say, like, we got Matt Stafford's replacement? Could the Raiders? Could the Broncos? Like, who else could come up? And if I'm Elliott Wolf and I've waited a lifetime for this, we moved on from our start. Like, what's interesting to me is the Bears, the Commanders, and the Patriots all moved on from their starting quarterback. They need quarterbacks. I like Jacoby Brissett. He's a solid B. But you're not taking this job and this opportunity and trying to finesse an extra second-round pick and hoping your guy's there.
So, Mike, we've been talking about how there's so many interesting quarterbacks in this draft and that there could be a lot of intrigue and a lot of trades. But just to reiterate, you're saying that you think Chicago, Washington, and New England are locks 1, 2, 3 to take quarterbacks in those orders. So where's the intrigue? Where do you think the draft starts then if it's not New England at number three trading out?
Yeah, I think it's Arizona. I think they have a really interesting decision. Do we take Marvin Harrison, the great receiver from Ohio State? Or do we go back to either the Giants at 6 or Minnesota at 11 and 23? And I think that's really where the draft starts.
I look at it a little differently. I wonder how you feel about this. I think when you're a general manager like you were, you're looking for two things right off the bat. You need a quarterback and a coach. Okay, and that would indicate that you're on a good path. I think the Chargers should operate as if they are a good team. They're not, but they should operate as if they are. They have a quarterback. They have a coach. That's the team that I would trade down multiple times and stockpile if I'm running that team.
I don't disagree, but if we look at Arizona, last year they traded out, got the extra one, then they trade back up for Paris Johnson. So my point is, like, Arizona could go back out, pick up some extra picks. I mean, that is a team that's moribund. I mean, they could use help everywhere. So they are more than one player away. That's why, like, if I'm Arizona, I trade out. And your point about the Chargers, I don't disagree either.
Mike T, who's the surprise team that could be in the quarterback market beyond the obvious, right? Like, I mean, we talked about the New Orleans Saints, the Raiders, the Vikings, the Commanders, the Bears, the
Dallas.
Patriots. Cowboys.
Yeah, and here's why. I love Dak Prescott. But, Chris, would you rather have Dak Prescott at $60 million a year, or would you rather have Michael Penix Jr. at $3.4 million a year? Because Deontay Banks was the 24th pick. That's what he's going to make.
Yeah.
I think Dak's a better player. I don't know if he's $56.4 million a year per year better, especially when we have bills like CD.
Hell no, he's not that much better.
Right, right. Especially when you have CD Lamb, Micah Parsons to pay. And look, we just saw it more recently with Stephon Diggs leaving a big contract in Josh Allen. We've seen Tyreek Hill leave a big contract in Patrick Mahomes. And I think at some point you're going to sit here and say, even like when you get into the Daniel Jones, J.J. McCarthy part of it, J.J. McCarthy, you're resetting the rookie quarterback. Like, it matters. Like, that contract, there's such value on that rookie quarterback contract.
Very quickly, we have, like, less than 30 seconds. Yes or no, if the...
I thought we were going to talk about tipping for haircuts again.
Oh, no. Well, you need one. No, I'm just kidding.
Wow.
Today is a Taylor Swift album.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Taylor Swift album.
So Evan's gone after my bank account and my hairline.
That happened.
Gone after. I've complimented.
In less than 10 minutes.
If the Cowboys draft Michael Penix at number 24 overall, do you think that Dak Prescott will ask for a trade?
No, but he will graduate for sure, and he'll be on the clock. What would be interesting is what would it take for them to trade him? You know, I'd be surprised because I think Mike McCarthy needs to win this year, but that's where those timelines probably don't add up.
The great Mike Tannenbaum. You'll see him on Get Up at 8 a.m. Eastern. Kurt Warner joining him as he did a little promo for that. Well done. Adam Thielen, stud wide receiver for the Panthers, will join us next. We're on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Well, Smalls is reporting that I may have scared off Adam Thielen.
What?
We were supposed to have him, but now Smalls says my admiration for the looks of his new head coach, Dave Canales, may have said, you know what? I don't know that I should join this crew. I mean, Smalls says, Evan, you got to ask him about that. Dave Canales, handsome guy. What do you want me to say? The new coach of the Panthers. They don't have, the owner doesn't get good press. The quarterback doesn't get good press. I think the coach is handsome. Simple as that. Okay. What do you want me to say? And now he's not picking up his phone as a result of me saying that. So put that on me.
Yeah,
you scared him away, Evan. Way to go.
Oh, he is here. Oh, Adam Thielen is joining us, wide receiver for the Carolina Panthers. He's playing in the Charles Schwab Cup tournament this weekend. And he joins us, wide receiver, of course, has had a hell of a career. Michelle Smallman, Chris Canty, and me, Evan Cohen. Adam, everybody thought I scared you off because I think your brand new head coach, Dave Canales, is a very handsome guy. Am I wrong about that?
Well, I think, yeah, he's got a very strong jawline. You know, he's a guy who looks a lot younger than his age. So, yeah, I can see that.
Okay, good. All right, we're good. We're on the same page there. All right, let's just go right to it. Your team last year, obviously not the year you wanted. You personally had a tremendous year. Can Bryce Young play?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm it's so fun to see him as we start OTAs now going into year two. You know, you forget, you kind of look back at this time last year, he wasn't even in the building yet. And, you know, we're installing plays, we're kind of getting familiar with the new coaches, and he's still doing his training and getting ready for the draft. So I think, you know, it's just cool to see him going into year two, his comfortability around the guys, around the facility. And I think, you know, last year was an interesting year, But this year, I think just the staff that's put around him, the positivity, the energy, it's really going to help him just be the person that he is and let him be himself and do it to the standards that he expects from himself and we expect from him as well.
Adam, you've been in the league a decade, so you know that there's always going to be turnover. But with the Carolina Panthers, they've had a significant amount of that, especially at the head coaching position over the last three or four seasons. I'm just curious from your perspective, what are the challenges that Bryce Young is going to have to overcome when it comes to changing head coaches in an organization that has been through a bit of a culture malaise over the last half decade?
Well, I think the plan now is to not have that change for him. I think they were very intentional with what they did and how they hired to make sure that there's some stability. Now, at the end of the day, this is the NFL, and things change from year to year. But at the end of the day, I believe that they really were intentional with the way that they brought in people to really support Bryce and to help him, you know, really reach his full potential and be the player that they drafted. So, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of stability, and we need to help that stability by winning a lot of games. And Coach Canales will be here for a long time.
Well, if you think he's going to be there for a long time, there's obviously characteristics about him as a leader that you think are going to translate well to the Panthers. We know he has a great jawline, Adam, but give us a scouting report on Dave Canales as a coach.
Yeah, no, I think he's a guy that just brings an energy, an attitude, a positivity, not only in his words, but his aura, but his actions. You know, you see him in the off season. I come in to train and leave in the building, and he's in there grinding in the weight room, and he's bringing 3-4 coaches with him, trying to get him motivated and dialed in. And you know, you get around the guy, and you're like, man, is he the football player? Or am I the football player? Because he's pretty fit. And so, you know, I think that aura, that energy, that attitude is contagious, and you can tell when the different coaches get up and speak that it's contagious to them. You know, they feel that from their leader, from the top, you know, going up, filtering all the way down. And, you know, I think the more and more we're around this staff as players, it's just going to, you know, it's kind of going to trickle down to us as well. And the leadership of the team, of the players, and then down to the young guys. So I think that really is something that you have to have to be a strong leader, and also somebody who can be real and can have real conversations, can have tough conversations. I think that's something a lot of times that's not talked about in being a strong leader, is being able to have the tough conversations and how to deal with that, how to deal with tough times. And I feel as if he kind of is set up to deal with tough times because of the way that he acts day in and day out.
We're talking with Adam Thielen, Panthers wide receiver. He's playing in the official Charles Schwab Cup tournament this weekend, the celebrity golf tournament that he's going to be a part of with the seniors as well. And we're talking to him here on Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance. Obviously, when you signed with Carolina, your goal was to be with Carolina. All year last year, I kept saying, unfortunately, with you guys losing last year, I kept saying if I was a good team, I'd go after him. Was there any point last year that you thought you could get traded?
Yeah, you know, for me, to be honest with you, I'm so focused day in and day out, week in and week out, just trying to be the best player that I can possibly be to help this team win. And, you know, you hear the rumblings and all that, but at the end of the day, I control what I can control, and then I kind of let everything else kind of play out. That's why I pay my agent what I do and let him do his job. But yeah, you know, for me, again, like this league is too hard if you're focused on other things. So you really got to focus on your day in, day out routines, your process, to be able to set yourself up for success. So there's not a lot of time to think about the other stuff.
Adam, it feels like every single year we're seeing receivers come out from the college ranks, get drafted, and become 1,000-yard guys. I mean, you look at last year, you had Puka Nacua over 1,400 yards receiving. 2 years ago, you had Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson both over 1,000 yards. The year before that, you had Ja'Marr Chase, Devontae Smith, and Jalen Waddle. I'm just curious, from your perspective, what is it about today's game that allows these receivers to come into the league and be ultra-productive as opposed to when you came into the league 10 years ago?
Well, I think the college game has really progressed as far as coaching, you know, especially at the wide receiver position. I feel like there's some really good coaches at some of these, you know, big programs that maybe played in the league or have experience coaching in the league or have been around, you know, big time receivers for a long time. So I feel like they're coming in with, you know, some skills that maybe are, you know, haven't been taught in the past and are more advanced than most. So you see a lot of these guys come in with the ability to run routes and understand concepts and really are just, you know, just have to adjust to the speed and physicality of the game, but that's about it. So it is interesting. You see a lot of those guys coming from Ohio State and some of these programs that, you know, have a receiver coach who played a long time in the league and understands what it takes to play at a high level and play for a long time. So I think that's part of the reason. And then, you know, I think a lot of these coaches understand how important rookies are now. I don't think it was always that way, you know, early on in my career. I don't think rookies were treated the same as they are now. I think teams know that you only have so many guys in your team, and you need every single one of them to have success. So they really focus on the development and getting these guys up to speed very quickly so they can play in year one.
Yeah, Brian Hartline is the quarterback whisperer, isn't he, though?
The receiver whisperer, he is, for sure.
Yeah, receiver whisperer, yep.
Adam, I wanted to ask you about the environment in Carolina. Not winning games is taxing on anybody. It's hard to overcome that as a group. But we're reading reports that were coming out of Carolina last year that painted the environment within the building to be a bit dysfunctional, a bit tense. We're outsiders, so we don't really know what it's like. You're an insider. What is the culture like in Carolina?
Well, it's great now. I think, you know, in any profession, in any business, in life in general, right? When the leadership is a little maybe, you know, the word out there was dysfunctional, but I would just say that a little bit, you know, they're just not all on the same page. When that happens, and then bad things, you know, losses come, stress comes, right? Well, now that's when dysfunction comes. It doesn't mean that there's bad people. It's just people, it wasn't a lot of people on the same page, where that's what I can say, you know, moving forward, and where I'm excited for this team, this offense, for Bryce, for all of us, is everyone's just, you can tell, is believes in each other, believes in the same system, believes in what we're doing, what we're installing, and you can feel it and you can see it. And so I think it was a good learning for everyone. You know, I think going into the season last year, I'll give you a little insight. I think going into the season last year, I looked at it as a positive because we had a lot of different coaches from a lot of different systems. And I'm thinking as a player, wow, this is awesome, because they're kind of going to be able to pick the positives in each system, kind of work together, put it together, and mesh this kind of little, like, this special system that no one's ever done. And what you realize is that just doesn't work because it's just – it's a lot of different philosophies, and when things don't start not going well, or you stop moving the ball, or you have a bad game offensively, well, then everyone wants to say, well, we did this before, or they did this, and we could do this to help us, and it just becomes tough for everyone to be on the same page. So that's a little insight into it, but yeah, just definitely excited for what we're building right now, and excited to move on and move into the future.
I take that as Adam says, don't eat at the buffet from the coaching staff. You don't want a little bit of everything. Pick where you want to eat and just eat it that way. As he's playing in the Charles Schwab Cup tournament this weekend, all right, who are you playing with? Are you good at golf? Like, should you be in this? Or you just got invited because you're a great football player? How are we looking at the golf game this weekend?
Yeah, no, it's a great tournament. The invited classic here in Dallas. And it's so cool to be around these Champions Tour guys, that a lot of them have had a lot of success on the PGA Tour before now going on the Champions Tour, and a lot of names that I grew up watching. So for me, it's so cool to kind of see them play. These guys are awesome, you know, in the pro-ams and then now into the tournament. They're so great about helping out and saying, hey, think of it this way. And they see your game and they can kind of help you in the little details. And they just think so simply about the game of golf. Which is really cool for me. So I really enjoy that. And then another opportunity to play in one of these celebrity tournaments around a bunch of these guys that have had a lot of success in their sport or in their field of work, as far as maybe being an entertainer. And you just kind of get to pick their brains of what helped them have success. And what you realize is people don't just show up on game day or show up on TV and have success. There's a lot of work and a lot of dedication, a lot of sacrifice that goes into it. And it's really cool to see what people do, what they've done to get to the highest of levels. And then how obsessed they are with golf as well, just like me. So I'm not sure about my game, but I'm excited to go compete. It's one of my favorite things to do is play competitive golf. I think it's a great thing for me to work on the mental side of what I do for a living and help me mentally get stronger. And because the game of golf is a mentally taxing sport, that it takes an insane amount of focus and really challenges my ADD. So I'm excited to get out there and play today.
Very humble. I let him into saying it because a lot of people think he could be a professional golfer one day. But okay. Adam Thielen, Panthers wide receiver, playing in the official Charles Schwab Cup tournament this weekend. Thank you so much for the time and best of luck this upcoming season.
All right, thanks, guys. Talk soon.
All right, there's Adam Thielen. Panthers wide receiver. He had a great year last year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He had a great year last year. Everything else around him, not as much. And he told us that all of the different ideas and different things, not on the same page, yeah, not the way you should go about it.
Probably not.
And you know that better than anybody because all of your staffs for the teams you played on all were Parcells or Groh or Harbaugh, and like they all focused the exact same way. All right, coming up, I'm Over It with Pat Costello next on Unsportsmanlike.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/unsportsmanlike today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/unsportsmanlike.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Each and every day at this time, Pat Costello, our producer, gives us items in around sports, entertainment, his life that he's over. A reminder, tune into baseball action tomorrow, Yankees and Rays, presented by Progressive Insurance, 12:30 p.m. Eastern here on ESPN Radio and the ESPN Radio app. Pat, what do you got for us?
Speaking of baseball, I would be furious if I paid money for a baseball ticket and went to a game and it was an hour and 45 minutes long, which has been happening recently a lot. We've seen a lot of under 2 hour games in baseball. I would hate this. Like, I get to the game, I pay all this money, I pay to park, I get inside, you know, after the first inning I go to the bathroom and get a hot dog, and all of a sudden it's the fifth. Like, what are we doing? This is not a good thing. The length of these baseball games.
You say it's not a good thing for the people that are actually going to the ballpark because it probably takes you longer to get to and from than the actual game itself. But it's not about you, Pat. It's not about you. It's about the people that are watching at home and making sure that it is something that's digestible. Because nobody wanted to see the five-hour baseball game, and that's what was happening a couple of years ago before they had the damn pitch
clock.
Why
bother selling tickets? Let's just close off all
because
the stadiums.
It's more
no
money.
Tickets.
What do you mean?
No tickets. We don't need
you're
them.
You're the diehard. We got you already. If you're coming to the ballpark, we got you. It ain't about you. It's about being able to appeal to a younger audience. What the hell are you talking about? It's a bad thing for baseball. Baseball's trying to make sure that it actually exists 50 years from now.
This is
so
the worst
what
take
doing,
he's ever had.
It actually ever, makes sense.
It's the worst take I've ever heard in my life.
Awful. It's
you go to a baseball game, you still get the nine innings, you still get professional athletes, you still get the experience and the ambiance, and you get out of there to do something else during the course of your day in less than 2 hours, and you're mad about that?
Yes. I want to sit there and enjoy a baseball game. I don't want to watch a game that's shorter than Rocky IV. What are we doing? I want to enjoy myself. If I'm going, if I'm spending this money, I want to go to the ballpark and enjoy the game for a while. I don't want to be there for an hour and 45 minutes, and it's a waste of gas money. It's not even worth going to the stadium at that point.
Pat, let me ask you this question. If it's dollar dog night, and the game is an hour 45.
You won't even see the game. You'd be in line for too long. You'd never see the game.
Small.
That's ridiculous. Pat, when you have to watch a full 162, I don't want these games to be any longer than necessary. The fact that baseball has found a way to shorten games is one of the best things the sport has done in years. We as a society collectively do not have the attention span that we used to, especially the younger generation of fans. In order for baseball to be captivating, they have to shorten the games. If I went and I could see all the action I needed to and have a result in under 2 hours, that's amazing. I went and saw the Cardinals and the Mets last season, and it was right around 2 hours, the game, and I was like, this is the greatest baseball game I've been to in years.
Why did you do that to yourself, going to see the Cardinals and the Mets?
All right, don't do that. Hey, the Mets have been good recently.
You know why?
The Mets have been good.
Because I had to scout out the snacks at Citi Field. Well, I hadn't been.
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, why would you punish yourself like that?
10-8 on the season.
Was that your penance?
10-8 for the Metsies. Just saying, we need to open this up for people. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You pay for a baseball ticket, you go to the game. The game is less than 2 hours. Are you happy or sad about that? Because Pat Costello just told us he's mad that the game is less than 2 hours. 888-SAY-ESPN. Go ahead with the next one, Pat.
To be clear, though, I'm not suggesting I want 4.5 hour games back in the sport.
No, but you're leaving that open for interpretation.
I'm telling you right now. 2.5, 3 hours, money. Great, beautiful. Like, I just don't want it to be shorter than the movie Moneyball. Anyway.
Next one.
Speaking of movies, I don't think Space Jam is very good, and I never have, and I don't understand why people think it's a good movie.
Wait.
Like, I rewatched it not all that long ago, and I was like, oh, this is, people just like this for the nostalgia and the sneakers. There's not actually any real good substance to it. Like, Michael Jordan's not a good actor.
This feels like a personal troll job today. You're ripping shorter baseball games and just to be clear, we're talking Space Jam 1 you don't like, because Space Jam 2, the LeBron version.
I didn't even see that one, but yeah, Space Jam 1.
Space Jam 1 is cinematic artistry. What are you talking about?
Are you sure?
Yes.
When's the last time you watched it?
A great movie. I don't know what you're talking about.
When's the last time you watched it?
It feels like you're purposely trying not to like it.
See, here's the problem with Pat that I've realized. What Pat does is he watches things now that were supposed to be good then in the moment and then critiques them based on what we know now. That's not fair. That's not
How is
actually,
that not fair?
Because you say, like, oh, 90s basketball is not good. But when we watch 90s basketball in the 90s, it was great.
Yeah, if and you when apply, you watch it now, it's not.
Right, because That's the picture fine. Is different. It's and the way in which they play is different. And you watch now a movie today versus a movie then, it's going to not look as good.
You know what's a great movie? Jaws, and that movie came out in the 70s.
That's about Dave Canales.
Pat, you're smoking rock. Space Jam gave us the Jordan 11s.
I said the shoes are great.
The Jordan 11s. The movie was good just because it debuted the Jordan 11s. Like, I got a full stop. Full stop. It's done. The take is, you're 0 for 2.
No, but the movie itself is not good. The shoes are great.
You're 0 for 2 with your take so far, Pat.
You like Space
Anything
Jam?
Else?
You like Space Jam?
I enjoy going to see the movie.
When's the last time you saw it?
A long time.
Give it a rewatch. Probably the first time I saw it
was the last time I saw it.
Okay.
Once was enough.
You'll see it again, God willing. You guys have kids. You'll see it again.
Oh, yeah.
I'll
show them that. That was the only Space Jam. I'm going to tell my kids that it was the only Space Jam ever made.
Yeah, please.
The LeBron one doesn't exist.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.